There was actually a team of Sydney Anglicans back in around 2010. It was headed up by a management consultant by the name of Tim Sims. And they did a whole bunch of research on church growth. Now, this is the findings of that research project. And so what they did was they looked at the NCLS data. They interviewed a whole bunch of Anglican ministers, senior ministers across the diocese. They collected a whole bunch of other church data to see if they could not figure out some concrete evidence about what helps churches grow. Now, these guys are thorough evangelicals. They know that in the end, God's responsible for church growth. He's in charge, he's in control, and we need to leave that to him. And they also know that prayer is essential. So they're sort of going from that foundation. With that foundation in mind, they're trying to figure out if there are other things that we can do to help churches grow. And so what they did was they looked at a whole bunch of churches, but in particular, they looked at the churches that were growing in Sydney to see if there are any common denominators between those churches. Because if the churches that are growing are doing the same things, then maybe we can, you know, take their findings and apply it to other churches and help them grow as well. And their data showed four things. So the first thing had to do with ministers, the ministers in the churches. And what they found was that ministers who are overworked or overstressed, in particular with an overflowing diary. Let me see if this works. So that's like just this is one of the slides from these results, right? That's a representation of a minister's actual diary. And they said these kind of ministers that are overworked, overstressed, are not leading growing churches. One of the findings they found and strongly recommended was that ministers need to have less weekly appointments so that they can work on the things that actually help churches grow, actually work on the evidence that they come up with here. Alongside that, this is really interesting, they found that the ministers of growing churches, get this, spent at least 12 hours a week in private devotion. Now, that's not sermon prep, that's on top of that. This is just private Bible reading, private Christian meditation, and private prayer. 12 hours a week. Interesting. So, the second thing they found had to do with youth and children's ministry. Now, this is a slide. This slide represents the age profile of all of Australia. So, that green line is the age profile of Australians. So, overall, we have a lot of 30, 40, and 50-year-olds. See that green line's up the top in the 30, 40, 50-year-olds, and then, you know, people start to die, so it dies off. The white line is the age profile of Sydney Anglicans. Now, what you'll notice is we are actually underrepresented in the 20 to 50 age bracket. We've got less people than Australia. But where we're really close to the Australian age profile is in the under 20 age bracket, children and youth. And the reason they found for this is that Sydney Anglicans are generally quite satisfied with the children's and youth programs that we have on offer in our churches, particularly compared to Anglican churches outside of Sydney. And that was the purple graph down the bottom. They haven't got many kids at all in their churches. And so they said what you need to do is you need to be focusing on, one of the things you need to be doing is focusing on children's and youth ministry. And so I for one, can I just say I'm really thankful for Tamara, James and Ethan, who are doing an awesome job in Ignite, Thirst and Quake respectively. And can I just say it'd be great if you could go thank them and their teams for the great work they're doing. While you're at it, ask how their devotional lives are going. A third finding, believe it or not, has to do with outreach. Now, this here, this slide, shows the four core areas that the team came up with that said if you put systematic effort into these four core areas, that's what will bring healthy growth to a church. So I'll just quickly run through that. That small white box down the bottom, that's transfer growth when people move from one church to another. That just happens in mobile society. All right, but the area that needs double the effort, so notice the times two on the left-hand side, is invitation ministry. That's what we need to spend most of our time on if we want to grow as a church. We need to be inviting people along to church. All right? And that's the thing that they said is we're going to grow the church the most. Now, you may be thinking to yourself, well, if invitation ministry is the most important thing to growing a church, then why aren't we talking about that for Vision Sunday 2018? That's an awesome question. The answer is outreach or invitation ministry is part of our overall church vision, and that's what we're preaching through the whole of Term 1. So rather than have two sermons on outreach, because we're preaching on outreach in about 5 weeks' time, I thought we would focus on a different topic for Vision Sunday this year, a different one of these findings. So if you want to know about outreach, and I hope you want to know about outreach, come back in 5 weeks. The finding that I want to focus on today is the fourth finding of this project, and that's the dark blue one down the bottom, which is talking about authentic gospel community, in particular, personal growth in faith in that gospel community. Now, this graph here, where is it? It's a little too detailed. Don't worry about the stuff down the bottom, but this is the graph that they showed. I just want to read for you the bit up the top. This is the important bit for this slide. So this is a case example where change occurred between survey dates. They looked at 2001 NCLS survey and the 2006 NCLS survey. Now, what they said was this. Where personal growth in faith increased significantly, the growth experience of the congregation changed dramatically. So what it says is if we want to grow as a church, which I take it we do, one of the top four things we need to focus on is promoting personal spiritual growth in our members. Now, yes, we need invitation ministry, of course. Yes, we need good children's and youth program. We've already got it. But alongside that, in order to get our church growing outwardly, what this data says is we need to make sure our church is growing upwardly as well. And there were two main structures that the project mentions for this. So they assume that you've got good preaching on Sundays, like good Sunday services. They assume that. Alongside that, they said what you need is a strong small group ministry, which we have here at Ord Anglican, and a good discipleship program. And that's what I want to talk about today. In fact, Tamara did a seminar with these guys when she was at Moore College. And the guys that were there, they said, look, you only need two things. You need a good children's ministry program and a discipleship program. And so for Vision Sunday 2018, that's what I want to look at. I want to look at what a strong discipleship program looks like. Now, we've already seen why it's important, right? It's one of the core things to growing a church, both upwardly and outwardly. What I want to do for the rest of our time is look at three aspects of discipleship. And they are namely, what discipleship is, who should be involved, and how do we get it happening in our church. And if you notice on the inside of your news sheet, there are 3 points, right? What is discipleship, who should be involved in discipleship, and how can we get discipleship happening. So, I have a quick drink, and then we will dive in with what is discipleship. So discipleship is basically a type of mentoring. So a mentor is generally someone who is older and more experienced who helps teach and train someone who's generally younger and less experienced. And this is what 1 Thessalonians 2 is talking about. So have a look at chapter 2, verse 7. I'll read verse 7. So this is Paul talking to the Thessalonians about what he did when he was with them. He says this, instead, we were like children among you. Just as a nursing mother cares for her children, so we cared for you. Now, Paul's mixing his metaphors a bit here. Okay, he's using two metaphors. The first metaphor is about being young children. He said, we were like young children among you. Now, by that, I take it he doesn't mean they chucked hissy fits and made a huge mess of the house and kept asking, are we there yet? Are we there yet? That's what my kids do. What I think he's getting at is he's saying, we were gentle among you. And we actually see that in the NIV text note down the bottom. If you look down the bottom of the page, you'll see a little writing. It says, we were gentle among you. And then his second metaphor says the same thing. So he says, like a mother treats her children, so we treated you that way. We cared for you. And he uses the exact same principle again down in verse 11. So have a look at verse 11. He says, "For you know that we dealt with each of you as a father deals with his own children." So the principle here is that Paul was teaching and training the Thessalonians just like a parent teaches their kids, even though he wasn't their actual parent. And that's what a mentor does. All right? They teach and train someone who is younger and less experienced, just like a parent does for their children. Yet there's one big difference. One big difference between general mentoring that you will see out in the corporate world and Christian mentoring. And the difference is that we're not teaching and training someone, a young recruit in our field of expertise. We're not even teaching and training someone for life in general. All right? What Christian discipleship does is seen down in verse 12. Now, I'll read to you from verse 11 again. "For you know that we dealt with each of you as a father deals with his own children," here it is, "encouraging, comforting, and urging you to live lives worthy of God." To live lives worthy of God. But the purpose of Christian discipleship is to teach and train someone younger and less experienced in how to become a mature Christian. And that's why a discipleship program helps grow churches. The kind of Christians who are usually out there having the gospel conversations and the kind of Christians who are usually out there inviting non-Christians along to church are usually the more mature Christians, right? The research shows us this. The Bible shows us this. And one of the best ways to encourage spiritual growth in someone is to do what Paul did with the Thessalonians, all right? To deal with them as a father deals with his own children, encouraging, comforting, and urging them to live lives worthy of God. The last question we need to ask is, for point one that is, how exactly do we do that? What does Christian discipleship look like? We know what it's doing. What do you do? And for this, to figure out how to encourage and comfort and urge people, we need to go back down the bottom to the nursing, back up the top, to the nursing mothers. So verse 7, halfway through, just that new paragraph. "Just as nursing mother cares for her children, so we cared for you. Because we loved you so much, we were delighted to," here it is, "share with you not only the gospel of God, but our lives as well." And so Christian discipleship has two aspects to it. The first is to share the gospel with each other. The primary way that all Christians grow in their spiritual maturity is by having the word of God brought to bear on their lives. That's my primary job as a minister. That's why the primary focus of our Sunday service is on the word. And so the primary thing that a Christian mentor will do is to open the word with their discipleship partner. So some people might be thinking, well, look, I couldn't be a mentor because I just don't know what to do. This is it. You simply open the Bible with them. You read a passage of the Bible with them and you chat about it. You don't need to be an expert on the Bible to do this. You just open the passage and you read it and you say, what does it mean to you? What does it mean to me? Sometimes you might get very little out of it. I do sometimes on that as well. But you just open the Bible, you read a short passage, you talk about it, and then you pray about it. That's it. That's the primary role of a mentoring relationship, to share the gospel. The second aspect that he mentions here is to share our lives. Now, this incorporates a huge range of things. I could preach a whole series on what it means to share your lives with one another, but we'll be here all term. If I can bring it down to one thing, and I can't, all right? So you can't really shrink it down to one thing. But if I were to shrink it down to one thing, sharing our lives with one another means sharing our Christian wisdom and experience. And so, like we heard a bit of that before with Lauren and Hannah. What do? They chat. They just chat about their life. They chat about their week. They chat about prayer points. And they're the opportunities you have to actually share your Christian wisdom and your Christian experience with one another. It's not just a one-way thing. It's a two-way thing. Right? We share our lives. That's part of what it means. So that's what discipleship is. It is sharing the gospel and it is sharing our lives in order to urge people to live lives worthy of God. So, the next question. Point number two is, who exactly should be involved in a discipleship program? Now, we could answer that by saying, well, anyone who could benefit from it. And that would make sense, would it not? I mean, look, to meet up with someone each week takes a fair bit of time. It's an hour or so out of your week. And time is one of our most precious commodities in today's society, alongside money, time and money. If I'm going to spend any of those, I better make sure I'm getting a return on my investment. So I'm only going to commit my precious time if there's a benefit, right? We could answer that that way. The problem with that answer, though, is that that is the exact opposite to how God thinks. Right? Never in his entire existence has God ever said, "What's in it for me?" To show this to you, let me ask you, do you know what Jesus is going to be doing when you and I get to heaven? You ever thought about that? Is Jesus going to be sitting on his throne commanding you and I to serve and worship him? The answer is no. Now, if you want to write this reference down and look it up later, it's one of the most amazing verses. Luke 12:37, all right? Luke 12:37 says that when we get to heaven, Jesus will, quote, dress himself to serve, right? He's going to put on his waiter's outfit. He will have us recline at the table and he will come and wait on us. Right, Jesus, that's Jesus' modus operandi. The way he operates for all eternity is to serve, to give. And that's part of what it means to be made in God's image. You see, when you and I ask, "What's in it for me?" we're actually operating against our design, against how we were meant to live. It's like, you know, I've used it before. It's like using a screwdriver as a chisel, or using your mum's good sewing scissors to cut up a tin can. They're not designed for that. And so you and I, as we've been made in God's image, are not designed to ask, "What's in it for me?" We're actually designed to ask, "What do I have to give?" And that's the answer to our second question. Who should be involved in a discipleship program? Anyone who has something to give. And guess what? That's everyone. Every single person, whether you are a baby boomer, whether you're a Gen Xer, whether you're a millennial, whether you're a mentee yourself, you have something to give. I just want to share with you some of those things now. Now, I'm going to go through by generations, those three generations, all right? I just want you to know, though, this section of the sermon, when I first wrote it was twice as long because you have so much to give. I just had to cut it down so that we're not here till midnight, all right? So the first thing, for baby boomers, what you have to teach, what you have to give, is that you can actually teach the younger generations that life is actually hard. This is one of the things that it's been shown that millennials don't quite grasp yet, and the reason is they haven't lived long enough. Right? I heard in a sermon the other day, said if you haven't really suffered in life yet, it's only because you haven't lived long enough yet. Life is difficult. Millennials need to be taught this, or they won't actually cope when suffering comes. One of the biggest issues that experts are telling us that millennials have is they have a lack of resilience. Right? What do I mean by this? They cannot cope when tough things happen. This is what the experts are saying. I can point you to these experts if you'd like. But what they're saying, the reason for this is because they have had a wrong parenting strategy. Right? A lot of them have been raised by parents who have this wrong parenting strategy called bulldozer parenting. So what a bulldozer parent does is they run the bulldozer in front of their kids and get rid of all the obstacles and all the difficulties because they want their kids to have a nice, happy, carefree life. Now, it sounds lovely, but you're actually doing damage to your kids that way because you're not teaching them how to deal with tough things when they come, and they will come. This is something that baby boomers can actually teach our younger generation because you've been there, you've had that experience. You can teach them that life is hard and you can help them build resilience for when it does become hard. So there's baby boomers, all right? Next generation, Gen X. What does Gen X have to offer? And remember, there's a fair bit of crossover here. So the things that the baby boomers do, the Gen Xers can do, and vice versa, okay? Gen Xers can teach millennials just how to do life in general. You see, and I don't mean this in an insulting way, but if you are a young teenager or a young adult, you've been an adult for about 5 minutes, all right? You really are, and this is not an insult, but you're just lacking in life experience. It just, you know, if you've been alive for 20 years versus 60 years, this guy over here or this girl over here has more experience, all right? And these are the things that we can actually teach our younger generation, how to do life. And the reason Gen Xers are good at that is because the things that the millennials are going through, the Gen Xers did only about 10, 15 years ago. And so here's an example. One of the things I've noticed about millennials is that they are constantly worried about money. And there's probably good reason for that. Gen Xers can teach them how to budget, right? Maybe even teach them that, well, there are some things you just have to go without if you don't have the money. We can teach them how to write a resume, how to do a job interview, how to please their boss in their new job. We can teach them how to navigate relationships. In particular, the first couple of years of marriage, they're not always easy. If you've been there, you can help the younger generation to deal with that. And finally, we can teach the millennials how to navigate the pitfalls of social media. What I mean by that is to teach our millennials that our identity is not caught up in posting photos that give the impression that our life is awesome. And our identity is not caught up in how many likes our latest selfie gets. All right? Our identity is not found in social media. It is found in Jesus Christ. What about millennials? What do you have to offer? Heaps. All right? Now, even as a mentee, you have heaps to offer. Remember, it's not just you don't just go into a mentoring relationship to get things out. You go in there to give as well, and you have things to offer. Here's the first thing. You have time and energy. You may not realize this, but younger people, particularly school kids and uni students, have a lot more flexibility in their time than people later on in life. On top of that, you've got way more energy than us old people. All right? Imagine what you could do. Imagine who you could help with all that time and energy. Number two, you are a native of technology. Now, our millennials may not realize this, but baby boomers, your parents, actually remember the first person in their street who had a TV. All right? We didn't grow up. Baby boomers didn't grow up with TVs. We didn't grow up with iPhones. You have. We're like a foreign citizens that come into technology. You're natives of technology, and it has enormous, enormous benefits. Enormous benefits. And thirdly, social media, which most young people are into, means you're really switched on to what's happening around the world. See, those of us who are not, you know, on social media all the time, we're often playing catch up on what is the latest trend, the latest phase, the latest gadget, and the like. And these are things that you as millennials can bring to a relationship like that. Right, so everyone has something to offer. Whether you're 18 or 81. So what I would love tonight is for you to think about whether you can meet up with another Christian one-on-one, like Lauren and Henry are doing, share the gospel with each other, share your lives with each other, to encourage each other to live lives worthy of God. Well, one more question as we close, one more point. How can we get discipleship really happening in our church? Now, like we mentioned before, we already have a discipleship program happening. Deb has been, in particular, looking after the female discipleship program for the last couple of years. We have some guys meeting up as well. But what we want, the purpose of this sermon, is to really get the momentum going to just make it bigger and better. All right, just expand what we're doing. And I've got three things that will get us hopefully being able to do that. So the first is that I have a sign-up sheet. Now, it's out in the church area. I might bring it in and put it on this table after the service. A sign-up sheet. If you are interested after today to maybe think about joining up with another Christian one-on-one, put your name on the sign-up sheet. Now, we cannot promise you anything if you do that. It's not like an automatic. We need to know how many names there are, and we may or may not be able to find someone to match you up to. I don't want to make any promises. But signing yourself up will show you, show us, the ministry staff, that you're at least interested. And what will happen is we'll take those names and we'll start thinking about who we can potentially match people up to. And so we'll come to you and we'll say, look, we know you put your name down. We've got someone that we think you might be good with. You can either at that point say, that's awesome, I'd love to, or I'm not sure if that's the person that's right for me, or I've changed my mind. Like you're not signing up, you're not signing your life away, you're just showing us that you are interested so that we can hopefully start to put people together. Second thing is, it is a limited sign-up. So what do I mean by that is the way our current program works, and this is the way we want it to continue to work, is that you sign up to meet with someone for 12 months. And at the end of 12 months, we ask you the question, do you want to continue? And at that point, you can either say, yes, I love my discipleship partner, I want to continue with them, or I like this discipleship, but it's not really working with my partner, can I have another partner? Or I just want to step out altogether, all right? So it is a limited sign-up. If you sign your name on that sheet, it is only for a limited period of time. And the third thing, the final thing, that will get this place, this discipleship program really, really moving, is if we want to offer ourselves to others. And the thing that will get us wanting to offer ourselves to others is knowing that someone else has done it for us. So in the corporate world, all right, the people that are usually the most open to becoming a mentor are those people that were mentored when they were younger. Right? So not only have they seen the benefits personally, they've also experienced the benefits personally, and they then want to pass those benefits on to the generation below them. They're usually a lot more generous in their time when they've seen other people be so generous with them. And so for Christians, if we realize that we have all enjoyed the benefits of discipleship, that will hopefully make us want to be generous with our time with others as well. Now, some of you may be thinking, well, wait a minute, Brennan, I don't think I have enjoyed the benefits of discipleship. I've never had a mentor before, so what are you talking about? What I'm talking about is Ephesians 5, 25 to 27. It says this. You know this passage. Husbands, love your wives, here it is, just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her, to make her holy, cleansing her by the washing of water through the word, and to present her to himself as a radiant church, without stain or wrinkle or any other blemish, but holy and blameless. Now, what this passage shows us is that Jesus shared his life with us, verse 25. Jesus shared the word with us, verse 26. So as to present us holy and blameless, verse 27. And what that means is every single Christian in this room has been mentored by Jesus. But the thing is, Jesus didn't just give up an hour of his week for 12 months, did he? He gave everything. And the reason he gave everything was to help you and I become the kind of Christians he knows we can become. And that's what mentoring is. It's helping younger people become the kind of Christians that Jesus knows they can become. And so this is the thing, right? When I bring the sign-up sheet out, if you go to that sign-up sheet, what I want you to be thinking is, I have something to offer. Right? Don't go to the sign-up sheet saying, what's in it for me? We've seen that. That's not how we should operate. I have something to offer. And I want you thinking about that when you go to the sign-up sheet, but I want you thinking something even better than that. I don't want you just thinking I have something to offer. I want you thinking there was a man who offered everything, who gave up everything to help me become the kind of Christian man or woman he knows I can be. That's what will help us want to pass it on to others, knowing that Jesus gave his all to help us grow in Christian maturity. Friends, when we see Jesus giving his all for me to help you and I grow into the kind of Christians he knows we can be, well, how can we not want to pass that on? How can we not want to pass that on? So friends, one of the best ways that this church will grow this year, both upwardly and outwardly, is if we all take that which Jesus gave us, all right, he shared his life and his word with us, and we pass it on to others and urge them to live lives worthy of God.
Challenging stuff there, but encouraging as well. So we're going to spend some time reflecting on what we've